collected in one place on the... Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I had two other concerns. Do you want me to say them now, or do you wanna wait?
Well, why don't we do will it come before page 19, the other two things?
One of them's on page 5, and it's very minor. No, the other's not.
Okay. Well, why don't we take the one on page 19 first, and then go back to your...
On line 20, and line 22 on page 19, these numbers, the 10,000, population of 10,000, and the arrival of the year 1988, those, I believe, were key to the basic move plan, and when this committee adopted a full move 1994 plan, I think it was your intention that this 10,000 population be replaced by 37,500, which was the key, or the project design population, and then that the CDC be terminated by the year 1994 instead of 1988, when the development's completed.
I had understood that that was more on the order of a
sunset clause, huh?
Yeah. A request, yeah. Mean that the...
Well, the whole thing is sunset, but it's a different population base and a different time is what I'm talking about.
Chairman, I think we realized when we made that change that we were taking out the split move, but the point was that at some point, if you've got a population of 10,000, it's about time the local folk ought to be running it, not the corporation. That was the feeling of
This relates, however, to development. We feel that the corporation has to continue the development until the city is developed.
It doesn't say that. I don't have real strong feelings on it, but I do think that if they haven't got, as far as the other aspects, and it covers pretty much the activity of the municipality anyway, but at some point there ought to be a municipality there if you've got 10,000 people.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to Representative Greening to note that the municipality comes into effect immediately, and it will be carrying out the functions of government. The CDC will have, according to this schedule and the bonding that you're recommending be approved, will have all of the building of the state facilities and the disposing of the land, working with the developers to build the candy stores and the department stores and the hotels and so on and so forth. So if you wanted a sunset provision, I think it would be more to review the CDC itself as opposed to the city. The city's going to be functioning right from the beginning, so I don't think that would be the reason that you would put a sunset clause in there.
Mr. Green.
What was the thinking, not just ending the sentence after the development plan has been substantially implemented, period?
The problem with that was that we felt the CDC could hang out there in 1994 and say, well, we're not finished yet. We go on and on and on. Someone had to determine that. So these automatic population and dates were good automatic times in which to trigger something, in addition to this other possibility of the development's plans being implemented.
Well, is there the perception that we're putting out stamp on this once and for all? I mean, I believe that if it looks as though we're 1980, or when we reach a population of 10,000, if it appears the legislature
10 years from now,
that the corporation should continue, I'm sure they'll care. I don't know. It was a process of one question to get there, but yes.
We don't feel that the city can take over the development of that city for the state. I'd really like to see these two numbers changed, because the city will be halfway developed and the corporation will drop out, and nothing happens, because the city certainly can't develop that city for the state of Alaska.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're correct in your appraisal that this 1988 day or 10,000 population, what it really has the effect of doing is allowing the legislature to look at the activities of the corporation at that point, 10 years from now. The corporation will have been in existence for 10 years by 1988, and it will be the first chance that the legislature really has a chance to appraise and make some judgments on the activities of the corporation. And I think that will actually be the only effect of this, is that the legislature will take a look, maybe change some of the legislation, or maybe give some direction to the corporation and probably allow it to continue.
I suspect, without knowing, that the commission's concern would be that the city would develop into a constituency, of course, and at that time, of course, it would have a legislator, I suppose, there, and they would like to take it over, and that work might be sort of compromised at that point. I don't know if that's a problem, but...
Mr. Chairman, probably doesn't make that much difference. The whole thing is geared into the whole selling of the bonds, the development plan. It's got to be by some agency, whether it's the CDC or we put it into DOTPF or something else. I'm trying to think, and it's very hard, it's been the whole thing, that this is a very interrelated plan. Is there any impact on doing this on the ability of the kind of financing you would get on the GO bonds, and that brings in an element of stability, and I don't know whether there's an impact, and I don't think we can judge that, but we looked at this as a whole, and when we have changes like this, it's a little hard to know whether we're creating something popping up over here. I can understand the idea of wanting to get that back to look at the structure. I guess I'd have to say a little element of doubt of changing that when it is not tied into the specific development plan.
Potential purchasers of bonds might not know what to expect under these states, but I don't know about the bonds.
We don't know enough.
The bonds are being paid back by the state. They're not being paid back by the CDC.
Yeah, but it's the stability of an ongoing process. You know, there are a lot of things go into marketability, and...
I think what we're talking about here is that this is a possibility that the city might take over before it's really prepared to do so. I think that's really what we're talking about.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one thing I think we ought to keep very clearly in mind, that the city is going to be there, going to be operating. They are not going to market, sell the land. So they wouldn't get into these particular roles here, except that they might take over the planning and zoning or so on. But I don't think they would get into the actual developing of the cities. The cities aren't developed by municipalities.
Mr. Corbett has a point that
he was working. Yes, Mr. Chairman, the Development Corporation financial plan for the corporation itself is quite a complex plan, and about 1988, the state has lent the Development Corporation, I think it must be, it's about $85 million, I believe, and if the Development Corporation ceased operating at that time, the state would have a lot of money in it, which conceivably they may not get back. So that's another reason to see the financial plan for that corporation through to the 94 date.
Anyway, okay.
Let's go to the next one.
Are there any further comments on this? I would imagine we're gonna have to tinker with this mechanism from time to time for the next 10 years anyway, but I don't have any brothers myself. Okay, would that be the extent of, well, I'd like to ask you to hang in there, and because Mrs. Rudd has got some suggestions, I'd like to hear your comments on it. Have you seen these proposals that we've got in?
I don't have them written out. Really, one of them,
Yes, please.
One of them is an idea that I'd just like to run by the Finance Committee and the Commission to see whether they think it's valid or not. I'm not sure of it myself, but we are appointing, or the governor is appointing a city council. The city of Melville, whatever it is, comes into existence immediately, and the governor appoints the city council. And they need not be residents of the capital city initially, because there are no residents, or very few at the moment. And I'm talking about page 22 now, when we're talking about the city. Council of the city shall have 5 members, 4 of whom shall be appointed by the governor and shall serve at the pleasure of the governor. And the development corporation shall designate 1 person to serve as a member of the council. Then on page 22 on D, it says council members appointed by the governor or designated by the development corporation need not be residents of the capital city. And I was thinking of this sort of ghost city, which we're going to have with no residents, but we are going to have a council of 5 members. And the idea popped into my head that maybe we should put a requirement in the law that the members appointed by the governor shall be former municipal elected officials, just to give the city council some kind of, in other words, what we're requiring is that the people who are appointed to the council have municipal governing body experience, so that when you have no citizens and no city, but you have a city council, it seems to me you need a council that's had some kind of municipal experience. And that's an idea that I just popped into my head, and I don't know really whether it's workable or not. But I know that there are plenty of former municipal elected officials all over the state who might be willing to spend some time, and the experience that they've had would probably be valuable to this city council that has no city. That's just an idea I wanted.
We couldn't find any locally. We can certainly find several people around the country. There's several in jail in Maryland. I know.
We should have some in jail here.
There you go.
No, it's just an idea that I had. I think those people are going to need some experience in municipal affairs, since they're not going to have a city and really have a citizenry to erect them.
I would think that the governor would take that into consideration when he appointed. I mean, I would, I guess.
Well, if we get Murray's, why, we'll have them all from Fairbanks. If we get Catrula, we'll have them all from Palmer. If we get somebody from down here, we'll have them all from Southeastern.
Ms. Buckle.
Well, I have a problem with that, Mr. Chairman, getting ex-public officials. I really believe that if the governor, in his wisdom, I hope, appoint people who are qualified, who have some ability, then they can always hire their staff to help them through at least for the time being until they learn the ropes of the game.
A couple million for studies.
I'm really concerned about getting people from throughout the state to come in and run a project of this sort, when they probably don't have any commitment to the community.
There's a brief on both sides of the fence. Ms. Rudd.
Well, the problem with hiring staff is that they don't have a tax base. They don't have any funds at all. They're not taxing, because until some land goes in private ownership, they can't tax property tax or sales tax until there is some population there. It seems to me it needs some expertise to get the bare bones of the thing outlined.
Ms. Rudd, I expect they'll tax the coffers of the state.
Yes, I imagine.
Just an observation. Mr. Green.
No.
covers. Lisa, were there others?
There was just one other thing I wanted to bring up, and that's just a technical thing. On page 5, I think it is, it says on 910, a director may hold any position of public or private employment while serving on the board of directors. But there is in 4463030 permission that you can't be a legislator. Is that public employment?
Barely.
It's going to be our first $100,000 a year director.
I just thought you needed some words in there saying except as provided in 4463030.
Yeah, why don't we? I think that's a good observation.
Can we put a limitation on this salary?
Well, the
directors may not, salary, combined salaries may not exceed a certain amount.
I don't know.
Political payoff here.
Well, that's it.
And how would you word that, Bill? Just accept as provided in section 30, is that what you, of this chapter?
Mr. Chairman, you might be able to do that, but specifically on this point, Mr. Berkowitz, who was the attorney for the Planning Commission, as you remember, and I worked over this section, and we felt that it's extremely clear that the prohibition applies. So that this language, it's constitutional and statutory, so we felt it was extremely clear, and we had it in and took it out as a redundancy.
Well, one man's redundancy.
Well, if it's constitutional, you couldn't, the statute couldn't provide otherwise.
No. Well, I think it ought to be clarified. I think it ought to be redundant.
But the language that you would use would be except as otherwise provided in, I believe it's 030.
030, yeah.
4463030A.
Well, let's be redundant. No,
but is that cover just legislators or cover others?
Just
The exact wording is no referring to the council, no legislators may be appointed or served.
It also says
is move the following language in page 5, line 12. Board of Directors, comma, except as provided in AS section 4463038.
Would you do that again, Mr. Chairman?
Just put except as provided in AS 4463038, where there are limitations on the public employment. Okay, is there objection to the motion? There's no objection, the motion carries. Okay.
How about, now that we're on 3, how about just no legislator? How about the judges?
Are you going to be a judge?
Get one to serve.
We got some of them, you got anything I do, you might want to use it.
No lawyers.
What's Sanders going to do?
But they sure as hell get the pay.
No press people.
No lawyers. Okay, are there further proposed amendments on the bill, further comments on the bill? All right. If there are no further comments, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent and then we report out Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 857, which will be drawn up in accordance with the motions adopted
here. Okay, yep, there are two possible fiscal notes that will be attached to this bill, and maybe Alex can explain.
Mr. Chairman, I could say two fiscal notes for 857, which is simply provide the maps of borough with funds through a grant from King Regional Affairs, or either a project planner on the maps of borough staff, which would be $25,200. This one has broken down salary and benefits, which would be half year, also 1907.
Which one?
And then the alternative fiscal note, which would be for them to contract out the consulting services when you just kind of use an arbitrary figure there at 50,000. And this fiscal note appropriation depends on the actual. So, yeah, they want to choose.
Further, you moved and asked unanimous consent to move up this bill, and then you quit right there. Is that where we are?
Bill reports coming around. Was there objection to report?
Well, there isn't a quorum in here. We only have five members.
Where is Ernie going?
He just left.
Well, that's where I said you knocked it off right there, and we didn't.
Well, he was
in here, but he went out right in the middle of when you were talking. I'd like
to. Well, the chair's going to rule that the motion carried, Mr. Swanson.
Well,
why don't we just.
Well, we only had six members, and I was. Okay, I can sign the committee report, however.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, here comes Ernie right here.
Okay.
Okay.
Let you stick around, then.
I move that unanimous consent that we report out to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 857.
Okay, hear no objections, motion carries. Did it again.
We didn't get that far along.
Well, we're still discussing that. I suppose the thing to do would be to. I guess we start at 25 and ask why not, since how that's the cheapest.
Mr. Chairman, the absence of specific directions, and knowing that the committee was going to consider amendments to involve the Mansu Borough on a phased, gradual basis, it seemed to come down to the choice of setting the precedent of funding a specific job for the borough, which is a cheaper note, or to give them consulting money so that they could arguably obtain two or three more experienced planners on a limited basis prior to the general plan coming before them from the corporation. And the legislature would be free to decide in future years what kind of assistance the Mansu Borough was going to need as it became involved in the planning and zoning over that decade.
They're going to be so rich off of this capital, they're not going to need any kind of funding.
Okay, I'd move on the 25.2 fiscal note. Jack, you do that.
When do they go aboard?
Well, whenever the thing's been adopted, the bond issue bill.
The planning committee. Capital Safety Committee is planning it over.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the point was the Mansu Borough under the bill that you just reported out has to review and comment on the general plan when it comes before, and they have to comment on changes in the specific plan. So we're just looking ahead to the next year to see what kind of money they would need to be ready in the event that the voters have approved the job.
Well, I think,
and we learned that they only have a staff in what I think three community planners at the present time.
Maybe we ought to wait till ask it for a more.
Yeah. Okay. I was drawing a motion. Mr. Barry.
Was it Mr. Barry's opinion or who expanded the title.
I don't know where that came from.
Mr. Chairman, the phrase "New Alaska Camp" that was added.
Wait a minute, there's a whole lot of stuff on that. What the hell is that?
I mean, it says in authorizing the collection of issues.
We look on back. The only thing, the only damn thing they got on them is the house number. The bill we took off the calendar this morning? No, it wasn't that one, it was another one coming out. Only thing that's left of the House bill is the number. The title is different, the wording is different.
Hart, you want to take up this?
Sure.
What is that?
We haven't announced that, don't I? I could do it at the next meeting. It's fine with me.
Did we cover that Petersville Road study of capital?
We sent out a resolution.
But there was some of the Senate capital budget.
Well, there may have been, you're right. But I don't think it was, including, I think it's unrelated somehow. But in which case, we wouldn't.
Dean Belkey has a statement to make.
We, on the Capital Planning Commission, express our gratitude to you for the generous courteous treatment that you've given us. This is a very, very coalition to recognize.
That doesn't include me.
Oh, yeah, they do. But we know that you'll do different things on money, but you have all voted to do it right, get this done.
Thank you.
Well, we ain't got a quorum.
Okay.
The meeting is adjourned.
The number?
First matter, let's see what's the number.
Maybe you and I can get together tomorrow morning and talk about it.
I'd like to take up Senate Bill 409 first, because I want to make an addition to it.
I thought maybe we could get enough guys around here.
I can't see anything very complex right now.
Senator, what is the floor?
Floor is none.
Yeah, put it out.
Focus it.
Oh, this is Brody's.
What is it, what?
How about tomorrow?
We gotta give that to them. Check, Rob. Go off the other part. Well, how bad is it?
All right, I'm gonna switch that because Jack Ferguson's here, and I'd like to, pull Jack and Mike on the testimony on HDR 46, which relates to the U.S. Senate ratification of the UK tax treaty, and that is Clark's bill.
What's the number?
HDR 46. Clark, you want to make a rough?
I'll remind the committee to pick this up back when the Sterling Gallagher informed me that he had it bottled in committee. It's unbottled. Relates to the treaty process of limiting the ability of the states to tax using a certain formula, which uses the whole worldwide income and allocates it back to the state of Alaska, which limits the state's options in dealing with taxation of multinational corporations. I oppose it just in principle, even though the state may or may not adopt such a method. Currently, it uses, in fact, currently it does use that method.
By way of background, Mr. Ferguson is a former administrative assistant to Senator Stevens of Washington, and he is directly involved in presently presently involved in the infighting that's going on with that treaty. Jack, you want to maybe have a seat down the end of the table if you can see over the paper and the crap.
Thank you. Sterling has retained me to lobby for the against action UK treaty and for the reservation that Ted has. Actually, Senator Church's reservation. It's Reservation Article 9-4, which would allow the state to tax multinational corporations on the unitary method. The situation is such that we struck this agreement about 3 weeks ago, and we're trying to do what we can to get this reservation passed, failing reservation to defeat the treaty. The treaty is important to us not only because we have a lot to lose in terms of revenues that we would otherwise obtain from British Petroleum and other British companies that are in Alaska, but it's important because it's a forerunner of many treaties to come. The Department of Treasury is presently negotiating with Denmark, and they expect to negotiate with France, and they will soon negotiate with Japan. And there are three states, really, that use the unitary method for multinational corporations. One is California, the other is Idaho, and of course ourselves. California will lose, they estimate, up to $130 million in revenues if they are no longer allowed to use the unitary method of taxation. Nonetheless, Governor Brown and Senator Hightower and Senator Cranston support the treaty because the trade-off they feel is great, and that is that it'll encourage Japanese business to invest in California. I think that that's a little naive to think that you can encourage companies to invest in your state because of a favorable tax problem. I think that this problem's been examined in Alaska more than not. The industry goes to where the resource is, and we've decided that they're here because of the oil, not because of the taxing methods of the state. But nonetheless, let me explain that it's a lonely battle. I don't know what you want me to say. There are 23 states that use the unitary method for domestic taxing policies. Most of the tax commissioners in those states, as well as the three that use it in the international circles, oppose the treaty. What it would do if we don't use the unitary method, they'd use the arm links method, and what a corporation could do is simply transfer their profits out of the state into another nation where they're not taxed on their profits, and thusly avoid paying a tax on the profits they show or they don't show in the state. As Clark explained, this lumps all of the profits on that they make in the area that you're taxing them on. In other words, we don't tax British Petroleum and any of the subsidiaries that they may own. We only tax them on the oil production and their profits in the world, so we have reasonable assurance that they're not avoiding taxes. There are many other aspects in the treaty which that are troublesome, not necessarily to the state, but if you take Article 8 of the treaty, it gives tax credits to foreign bottoms. For this reason, the maritime industry is opposed. SIU, MEBA, Marine Engineer Benefits Association, are opposed to the treaty. We, on the other hand, find that we're at odds with the Business Roundtable in Washington, D.C., that was being heavily lobbied by Dr. Charles Walker, John Nolan, who is the Deputy Assistant Secretary, Under Secretary Simon, whose idea this was, is lobbying against it on behalf of the International Chamber of Commerce. We have found that most industries that have representation in Washington, D.C. are lobbying on behalf of the treaty. H.J. Hines, for example, is Tom Corlogus lobbying for it. Weyerhaeuser and other timber industries are lobbying for it on the West Coast. Fortunately, we have a coalition of people that I think can wage a credible fight on the floor to get this amendment adopted. It takes a simple majority, whereas the treaty would take two-thirds. Senator Packwood, who did at one point have a hold on the bill, now intends, or at least he has said at some point, that he may intend to filibuster the UK treaty. Chances are the UK treaty will come up after the labor law reform filibuster is complete, and I expect that'll take place after July 10th recess. If you have any questions, I can answer. I'll be pleased to do so.
Okay.
Yes.
Jack, when you referred to California, you weren't referring to the UK treaty. Other
trees,
not
the way,
following this one?
Yes.
This is the kind of the test case?
Right. Once the UK treaty goes, you'll see many other treaties follow. And then, in fact, they've expressed an interest in even broadening the authority with legislation. There's been legislation introduced which would do the same that the UK treaty would do, and it's been sponsored by Senator Mathias, and however, it's been bottled up in committee. That, in fact, is one of the objections we'll argue. We have two or three ways of arguing against the UK treaty. One of them is that you're attempting to legislate or determine taxing standards that the states apply through a treaty. We think it'd be more appropriate to do it through legislation than through a treaty. The treaty avenue is just an end run because of the failure for them to get legislation to do the same thing. But your question speaks to this is a forerunner of many yet to come. And so, and the opposition speaks to that all of the time. That's why Japanese industries are so actively lobbying this treaty.
Well, with the difference being that the House has no part in ratifying the treaties.
That's correct.
Whereas they try to accomplish the same result, they have to put the question through both houses.
That's correct.
If you examine the language of the
House Joint Resolution 46. Do you have any suggestions as to how you might raise some arguments that should be raised? Or?
No, I'd like to. I can do it very quickly. I'm very familiar with the arguments that we've been using. I simply understood from Steve this morning whether or not a resolution would be helpful. Well, a resolution from the legislative body would be extremely helpful.
Jack, you might be, you know, if you want, take a minute and just look over that language. We could amend it in here in order to comport with whatever the state's position is before the Senate. And I'd like to take a few minutes and suggest some language. Maybe we could go through a couple of these other things.
Yeah, sure. Let me just look at it.
Ms. Blackwell.
Are we addressing Articles 9 and 10, or wasn't there? I think I was involved in this somewhat, but I thought I was just objecting to Article 9-4.
Yeah. 9-4 is the most critical. What 10 does, 10 is the trade-off for 9-4. 10 gives tax credits to U.S. stockholders in Britain and so on, and that's what they're saying. And we give tax credits, we get tax credits. 10 is the trade-off. If you oppose 10, all you're doing is taking away the trade-off vote. It's worth doing, but the emphasis is on 9-4.
As I understand it, the problem with 10 from a state point of view is that it limits the amount of taxation on dividends on BP stock, essentially. Is that the we're limited to I had a copy of it here.
Do you have a copy for Sandy?
Would that be on line 7, Mark, on page 2?
No, I'm not looking in the, just...
That be the amount?
That's what, I'm looking for the actual language.
I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Reading, but it... It limits the taxation paid on dividends. See, where you have BP is owned by Ohio, and with respect, I was looking for the result could be.
I didn't bring a text of the treaty with me. Does anyone have the text here? Reservation, I can say, only addresses Article 9-4, the reservation that's going to be offered by Senator Church, who's the ranking member in the Foreign Relations Committee. Does not concern 10.
No, that's
why don't I'll examine this and then why not do that?
What we might do, Jack, and we could get into some of these other things, and whatever you're ready, we can come back to.
Okay, I'm sure my remarks will agree. So.
Okay. And what I'd like to do is to go into Senate Bills 408, 409. Senate Bill 408, please first. Mark?
Yeah. 408. This is the companion bill 409 to upgrade the It's actually just pre-construction planning, engineering study, upgrade the Petersville Road so we can get over the hill into the Tocositin or into Denali Park, and we get that corner of it, so you have road access to the proposed visitor center, which is on the south side of the mountain. The real impetus behind this whole thing is that there is no tourist facility or lodge or hotel in the park from which you can see the mountain. In fact, it's quite a drive before you get to the mountain. And the Park Service has been quite reluctant to put any facilities within the park, the McKinley National Park. So this facility would be within the state park, the Denali State Park, and would be constructed by the feds and be operated jointly. But it would attract quite a few people, and it is, having been there several times, it is the most scenic and spectacular view from which to see Mount McKinley. And this has nothing to do with the Teflon tent, although I think there's another senator that we're familiar with who would like to have this bill expanded to deal with that feasibility study of that. But this has nothing to do with that. It deals with the visitor center only. 408 deals with the upgrading. The pre-construction planning work is necessary to upgrade the road to get in there and start construction.
How about 409?
I have a couple questions on both these bills. I have a couple questions.
Okay. Well, maybe why don't we go ahead and get a presentation on the 262?
Got, probably should. What do you have in your file? Nothing but the bill?
With the bill in the
fiscal note. We've got the bill and a fiscal note.
What do you have,
Tony?
Do you have that?
Well,
he's
a day.
That has nothing to do with it.
I don't know.
Okay. I probably should get this handed out. This breaks down the figure.
We should have stopped you.
Anybody? I think I'm just. I don't have any objections.
$260,000 is based on the first phase of this project. Includes site development planning, soil investigation, utility planning, and it's the fiscal year 79 portion, that first phase. Part of this is happening. Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Russ?
Well, on 409, if that's what we're talking about, in the analysis prepared, I guess, by Mr. McWilliams, but it says something about $1,034,780. That's a what is that? That's not what we're doing, right?
No. That's a complete drawing.
Okay.
Swanson, you had some questions on this project. I believe maybe this would be an appropriate time to take them out.
Well, I might just talk about the program a little bit. I have some concern. If this project is going to be inside of the park or inside of the future park extension under the D2 bill.
It's in neither.
It's completely out of the park then, both of them.
Both sites within the Denali State Park.
Both are within the Denali State Park.
They don't have anything to do with people, the Park Service. So if you want to have a people facility, you gotta get it off. You understand?
No, my concern was that with the park extension, and there is a trade, and some of these trades are just starting to come to light, that the park people have traded off with the state. certain lands that belong to the state and already traded them off. Now, I don't know if they're in the park or not. And if we do anything like this, I want to be sure, Mr. Chairman, that we don't wake up and find out that our park people have made a deal with somebody in the national park.
You know of any such?
Right.
You do.
You better lie. You've got your life, I do. This is the battle we had is going on right now over our people. State people traded off the state's right-of-way on the road to Stampede to the park. Made a deal, and it didn't come to light until I had proposed to upgrade that road for some people in a recreation area. And Ted Smith and Mike Smith had made a deal with the national park people, to take the state's right-of-way and trade it off for some land somewhere else. Of course, we got it out in the open now, and we're going to flesh it a little farther as we go along. But I just want to be because the park people, the national park people, are not friendly to Alaskans at all.
Well, Mr. Swanson, that's what this bill is supposed to do. This is on state land. The way it's set up right now, unless with some relatively minor exceptions that people are not going to be able to use McKinley Park anyway. It's for something else. It's not for people to use.
So I have no objection to the bill. I just want to be damn sure that some of it hasn't been traded off. We wake up and find out that we've got another one of those funky state trades going on.
I'm all for giving a better view of them.
Are there further questions, further explanations, or anything else in respect to these two bills, Mr. Meeson?
Clark, who would use this? Just any visitors would be able to?
Anybody came to Alaska? It would be a public
accessible by car?
Yeah.
And how close would you be how close would the viewpoint be?
I think at that point, I think it's about 30 miles. To the mountain, to the base of the mountain. You look straight up the Tokositna River, and you look up, there's the Tokositna Glacier. The weather tends to be much better on that side. You just generally get a better view. And of course, you have a better access to it. You have a place where people could actually stay and view the lodge, and they'll have those trails and walks. Right, if you're in McKinley Park right now, you're lodged in boxcars.
This wouldn't provide for a lodge, though, right?
No, this, and the feds would provide that, but this is just to show that the site is feasible and that you develop a plan for the lodge and activities around the lodge.
And what were you saying about the Park Service doesn't get into people's things? What's the distinction?
Well, the Park Service, the people that work up there, and I've spent some time in the park, look at it as their own private domain, and they're resentful a lot of times for a lot of people coming in. Now, the only facilities now for getting people in the park is the bus that takes you down the road to Wonder Lake. But for a lot of people, that's a pretty arduous thing. You have to get up at 5 in the morning, and it takes all day to get there. And for a lot of older people, the only view they're going to get is going to be from the hotel or the surrounding area. And they've never had a lodge. Even the one that they had before burned down was located back towards the railroad in the past there. And so you never could see the mountains, clear or rainy. And this would give a view from the lodge and from various points you could hike to. That's the purpose of it. But McKinley Park, unlike some of the other national parks, is really very undeveloped. Maybe you want it that way, but in terms of getting tourists to really see this wonder, you're never going to do it from within the park, unless there's some change of attitude by the park commission.
It won't be, because it's a wilderness.
Yeah,
you won't be allowed to even, you can use the road, but you won't be able to get off.
They would have closed it off in 1972 if it hadn't been for Andy Warrior.
Steve, what were you saying though?
Well,
in spite of what those people say in Washington, I guarantee you that the way the bill's going to come out is there's going to be a wilderness there, and you won't be able to use a park in County Park.
You can go in there on the buses and stuff, and that's it. They won't allow you to hike or anything else.
That's a man. I have a question. You said that it would be federally funded. If it's federally funded, would it be federally funded in a state park?
Well, it would be joint, it would be, no, it's going to be funded within the state park, right. I think there's several. What?
The funding. After this.
For the facility
itself.
The operating costs would be provided by the federal government. I believe the concessions, though, would be operated by private enterprise. The actual lodge itself would be built by the federal government within the state park.
Within our state park?
Within our state park.
Federal government?
Right.
I suppose that's part, you might say that's part.
That's part of the deal.
Deal, since how we can't use it.
I have no objection to what we're trying to do.
Which isn't really a park.
When we get the federal government involved in it, they'll pull the strings, just like they did in McKinley.
Oh. Mr. Schaefer.
Great, entertain a motion.
Well, not right yet.
Okay.
I have another matter I'd like to bring up at this time.
We'll have some.
There's some, in one of the bond bills, there's an item for $8 million for the Tanana Valley Community College. They don't have any buildings, and there's an item in there, okay? Now, it develops that right now there's a building, the old BLM building, which they can get for what, $2.5 million, which is
approximately $500,000 for the bond.
$2.7 million was the final.
That $2.7 million, Mr. Chairman, included operating funds, faculty, and some support staff. So the building and its equipment would be about $2.3 million.
Okay, $2.3 million. Okay, now, so that's, the problem is that they need about $2.75 million to hold that option until March. And the number on the bond issue will be reduced to $2.3 million, but they've got to have the time the bond issue to pass and, you know, the money to be available to make the purchase. So what I'd like to do, and Dave's got the details on that, they came in about last week. We didn't have any opportunity to take a look at that, so the Senate is amenable to this. Rather than simply waiting for the, making some attempt to get the money up from the general fund, seemed to be the best thing to do to buy an option, and the option cost was $275,000, I believe.
Yes, that would provide rent for 9 months, and reduce the building. Basically, an option timeline to allow the time for loss to pass. Keeps the building
moving. For March.
Steve, is this, are they Smith buses or federal? Well, it's gone to federal hands and it's now off to the state.
They're going to sell the building, the BLM building. It's a fairly new, it's really a nice thing. It's a beautiful building. It's on Aurora Drive.
Yeah, what I'm saying that if we don't exercise the state option through the GSA option, then it will fly away from the bond. You're really looking to plan to do.
Yeah. And, you know, assuming people want to go along with the original proposal, it does appear to save the state around $6 million, but I don't, you know, I don't know whether people can plan to go along with the original proposal or not, but I think it's reasonable.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the amendment bill to reflect $275,000 for.
Okay, Mr. Schaefer moves and asks unanimous consent that we report out committee substitute for Senate Bill 409, which would add a section 2, I guess, and renumber the two following sections accordingly. The section 2 would be read as follows: the sum of $275,000 is appropriated from the general fund to the University of Alaska for option on the purchase of the Bureau of Land Management building for use by Tenenbaum Valley Community College. Is objection to the motion? Okay, if there's no objection, the motion carries. I move also on Senate Bill 408. There's no change in that. Hearing no objection, motion carries. Jack? What'd you come up with?
I just changed a couple of things. I take the state's rights argument, which is a strong argument. I delete the last part of the sentence. State's rights argument starts on line 29. And what I do with that is I'd eliminate, thus creating an opportunity for massive avoidance of Alaska state income taxes due in the North Slope oil earned by British Petroleum Corporation from the North Slope. The fact that we've identified one company is, I would leave that out. We appear to be too self-serving by identifying the company and the fact that we have a bonanza in oil and it happens to be owned by a British Petroleum Company. It detracts from the state's rights argument, which is referenced in that opening statement, whereas Article 9 of the United States United Kingdom Tax Treaty would limit the state's right to apply a unitary business doctrine. It's not a question of the state's right to apply the unitary business doctrine, it's a question of the state's right to apply any method of taxation, whether it be arm's length or whatever. It's an intervention on the state's rights. I would either make 2 points of that or leave it with the one and say something to the fact that it limits the state's rights to apply its method of taxation. You've addressed the unitary tax method elsewhere. The reason I like that, is, as I've stated, is because Senator Laxalt is one who is going to lobby hard for in opposition to 94, and his state of Nevada, in fact, has no income tax, corporate income tax. He's not involved with this bill in the least, excepting he doesn't like this treaty telling his state how it can tax. So I would make that point, and not otherwise confuse the individual about it with regard to BP. And I'd insert it on line 17, and then what the other whereas is just follow, because it is a strong argument. The only other thing is on line the second page of line 15, I would add into the Honorable Blumenthal. Blumenthal is really responsible for this treaty more than the State Department. In fact, we were told the State Department's not too excited about this, but Treasury is taking the lead, so to that end, I'd send it to Blumenthal. Well, oh, and 10.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The question of Clark rose with regard to 10. The way, and I don't have Article 10 here, but this limitation of 15% only applies in one circumstance. If that circumstance is somewhat changed, then they go down to paragraph 2. I could read it, but we're not always going to be limited to 15%. We could be limited to 10% with some alternatives, if I read this correctly. If the United Kingdom changes its tax credit allowance, so it maintains the status quo, we're limited to 15%. If it changes the status quo, paragraph 2 applies. I think that maybe you might want to have staff read that more carefully and eliminate the 15% to be more precise, so as to address either circumstance.
Okay, have you got that kind of written down?
You were actually just asking the language to be taken out with the exception of the addition of Blumenthal.
I would, on the state's rights.
We ought to be concerned with state's rights position, whereas the precedent set by amending state law through the use of the treaty power is unprecedented and violation of whatever.
Yeah, constitutional rights.
The state's rights to tax, yeah, that's the spirit of the state's rights objection.
Okay, I'm just going to add a sentence here.
What time do they play?
6:00.
Well, I tried to get you out of here tomorrow night.
What's Blumenthal's first name?
I was just thinking that.
Michael.
You know, he was in two concentration camps. I read a biography of him.
Is that right?
Biographical week.
Oh, yeah, we could test the button every week.
It's real interesting. Because it was a hell of a guy, but he was in a German concentration camp, and they paid their way out of it.
You guys
got out of here on this boat. And went, this is before the Asian theater.
I've been at this since last fall.
Got on a boat and went over to somewhere, India or somewhere, and got
stuff going out.
We've got it. Okay. Are you ready for the amendment? Okay, let's go back to that. Okay, look, while we're waiting, Senate Bill 919 has been requested by the Speaker, okay? What it does is it doubles the amount of grants and aids to public libraries to $500. It's now $250. The cost of the bill is...
What's the number?
It's 919. The cost of the bill is it's $25,000. 9,000 back in 77, 9,000 in 78. It was back then.
Well, that's
Okay, is there a motion to move out House Bill 919? Yeah, I see one back there somewhere.
I still move.
Okay, so you're in the objection. Somehow find its way out of the way.
I just simply say so.
Yeah, I told Dave to do it. Have to raise some taxes this session in order to fund the budget.
Sure, I hope that.
Would you?
On your company.
Taxes you want to raise. Income tax.
The franchise. Corporate.
That's right.
Corporate tax.
Corporate taxes. You have to speak with that.
You're. You know, this bill act. They did that to the end of salmon industry years ago, and they wound up with about one-third the cabbage in the state that they have now.
Hey, Swansea, you think you can get on that show tonight?
Hell no.
You gonna watch it?
No, I won't be on there.
You were on, you just took my spot that night.
Oh, no, I was on the Senate side.
Still part of my time.
Once again, let's take up Senate Bill 45, radiation.
Can we get this out of the way?
Yeah, yeah, I was gonna get the other out of there.
Okay, I'm on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I signed it.
No, I wish I read it.
I signed it.
Hold on. You buy a fire tracker for the Salvation Army. They had it sold today, we got it overnight anyway.
Signy die next year.
Yeah, we can all.
I agree. I'm able to. They don't speak. They want it. To my family.
Let's go back on the record, man.
Those who still have bills.
I don't have one.
On HJR 46 now, there is a motion to report out an amended resolution. Mr. Green.
On page 1, line 23. In lieu of beginning with the words to minimize, strike all the rest of the sentence. Say, instead, to avoid taxes lawfully levied by the state, semicolon, and. I've got it written down on here. Then on, it's all in motion. Then on page 2, line 1, it says, limit the state's right to, in lieu of that language, that whereas, but develop a reasonable system of taxation, semicolon, and a new whereas starting in section on line 5, whereas use of the federal treaty power is under our federal constitution the most inappropriate mechanism to deal with the taxing power of the state, semicolon, and then we just add after Secretary of State and to the Honorable Michael Blumenthal, Secretary of Treasury. Period. Treasury.
Okay. Okay. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion carries.
Let's go to radiation.
And we will go into radiation. In the form of Senate Bill 45.
I was wondering why you were sitting here.
Back again, huh?
This is actually. Bill 45. Commodore, you have, have you tested live previously on this?
Yes.
I thought you had. I wasn't here when it took place. There were, I believe, some proposed amendments. I see them in here anyway. Clark, you want to take this?
Okay. The amendment, it's a one-page amendment, and it deals with deals with the signing right now licensing of a atomic. A nuclear plant is strictly a federal matter. However, the power to license or permit the siting is a state matter. And we have a statute that deals with atomic energy. But this particular, since we don't have any permitting procedure at this time for it, I think it's appropriate that we address it in this bill. Does everyone have a copy of the proposed amendment?
It should be in the bill file. Bill folder, the proposed amendments. It's on a single sheet here.
We had this up when you guys were in pre-conference.
And the only reason we held it over because of Clark gets
objection to adoption of the amendment. There's no objection to the amendment. The motion carries. There's another letter in here dated March 15th, 1978. Mr. Titusdorf, have you seen this letter?
From Keith Specking?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And we concur with that.
All right.
I'll move the amendment recommended by Mr. Keith Speck, appearing on page 3 and page 4, I believe.
Okay.
It's to the House Committee Substitute, Senate Bill 45.
Okay. Is there objection? There are no objection. The amendment carries. Is there a motion on the bill?
I move the bill out.
Wait a minute. I have a question here. Keith Specking's bill. I mean, the amendment here.
It's in the bill for it.
I have it.
Okay.
I have a question to ask.
Okay. Mr. Hyde is there.
Is the military now in. Do they have a storehouse of nuclear weapons in the state?
The way the bill presently reads, it would forbid the military affairs from hiring someone with rheological background, rheological health background. And the same would apply to the Department of Environmental Conservation, and the department which presently has all the statutory responsibility for rheological health. So the idea is simply to take that restriction out of the bill, since military affairs does have involvement, you know, in the case of a national disaster and so forth. I might add for your information that the Russian satellite, which crashed in Canada, missed Alaska by 7 minutes. And I view that as just another reason why Alaska should get on the ball and get a rat health program. There's no way we could have responded to that. And we were informed after the fact that it was known about 2 weeks in advance the satellite was coming down, and they just didn't know where it was going to hit. And about 6 hours before it was hit, they thought there was a good chance it was going to hit Hawaii or Alaska, and it, as I say, they missed Alaska by 7 minutes. Canada ended up with the problem.
That ended us.
They ever collect from the Soviet Union on that?
No, the Soviet Union actually denied, first of all, that it was theirs, etc., but they subsequent to that have admitted it was their reactor, and yes, it was in a bad orbit. And I was kind of impressed to find out that we're tracking all those satellites to the extent that you can tell when they start getting in trouble. They start wobbling, and their orbits start changing slightly, and you know that it's going to come down. And so apparently, we do have a fairly sophisticated system to watch all these satellites, and there are a lot of them.
Have they found that missile that they accidentally dropped up around my hometown?
Yeah, I'm not aware that they have found that.
While we're doing this, I'd like to entertain a motion to force the bill out.
I move.
Finance Committee said
okay. Is there objection to the motion by Mr. Schaefer to report out Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 45, incorporate the changes adopted by the committee? Hearing no objection, the motion carries. I think we can go off the record. Is there anything further to be taken up by the committee?
I move to adjourn.
Okay. Okay.
Are we meeting
9:00? Yeah, 9:00. Bring the meeting to order. Is Jay available? It said 880, but I guess it means 980. Okay. House Bill 980 is the most recent legislative affairs supplemental.
Here's the end of this.
June the 15th carries us to 980. Members can take a look at this. That's a breakdown.
Does this take us up to the 4th of July, Mr. Chairman?
No, it takes us to June 15th.
Move it up.
I move it.
Wait a minute. Got up, Jay.
What did you say, Rush? Where you been?
Right there.
Get back.
No, I might.
Good to see mornings.
Okay, apparently, Mr. Swanson's favorite television show is running out of the needs of a tube and a professional studio editing 3/4 inch VTR. I don't know what the hell that is, and the person who does isn't here.
That's the same thing we took out on the court. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's a videotape recording.
Does anybody understand what this is? I don't understand. Okay. Jim, you want to explain the request of Council 78?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The tubes on the cameras are failing, and the professional editing recorder has been going in and out, and they believe it will fail within 2 or 3 weeks. in the occurrence of either event means the show goes off the air. And they have 1 week's order time for the tubes.
How much is it?
The show must go on.
Total of 20,000. 11,000 for tubes, 9,000 for the editing recorder.
Last 2 weeks, and they don't need any money. Does that have to be made in a separate section? Just increased or what?
Well, it would be, I think the thought was it could be added to House Bill 980 as a separate section.
Can't be put in the same, but something.
Jay, can you just put it in a lump sum fee?
For me, that'd be a better way to do it.
That's a better way to hide it, huh?
Yeah, that's a better way to hide it.
Well, good luck.
Let's bring it out in the open. I think we ought to have a separate people wrangling around for a while.
Yeah.
A little excitement.
So we talk about how the fun for the hour.
Which one's Buckley and which one's Buckley?
Well, Buckley got fired. Oh, Huntley.
She told me that I thought she was Huntley. Yeah, real man.
That really is part of the legislative session, buying TV tubes, is it? Get along with others. I mean, I got to pay the help. I want to get my per dime, but
well, I think
you know, the rest of it is sort of.
I think it is. You know, there's other TV stuff in the supplemental. I think it is. I don't think
there is.
Yeah.
Look through that backup on there, and you'll find there's teleconferencing and TV stuff. I don't think it's a thing. That was special subsection.
Huh?
You got to pay for all of the special tapes they made for all these statewide candidates that's popping up. Looks like you got a good one yesterday, Fred.
Okay. Come on now, I mean,
she wouldn't sell me mine, but you'll sell them to anybody else but me.
Well, have you ever thought why?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay, anyway,
$600,000.
Just briefly say what legislative finance is on that.
What we have is $600 a day in all the temporary session help. Legislative affairs has pledges for 15 more days, is it?
Yeah.
So 15 times 600 is 9,000.
Okay, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that we amend the bill by adding a section 2 to the effect that the sum of $9,000 is appropriated from the general fund to the legislative finance division, I guess. Is that the way it's for additional expenses in the second session, 10th legislature?
I object.
Hearing no, all right, there is an objection to funding legislative finance.
He thinks that's TV.
All right.
I have no objections to the, objection, Mr. Chairman, to the regular order of furnishing the money for their per diem and for our help and the legislature, but I certainly object to cranking in that money out of that for that show downstairs.
All right.
I don't think it should be here, and I think that they've probably got oodles of money over there in education that's already been appropriated to that operation. If they really wanted to, they could find the money.
Mr. Swanson, the motion was to pay the legislative finance employees.
Well, I don't find that person. I'm objecting to the amendment.
There was no motion. All right. Okay, all in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Okay, all opposed? Okay, motion carries. Now, thank you. Okay, now we can discuss. All right, the TV motion. Now, is somebody going to make that?
Yeah, do you want that in a separate section? Really? You think it should be?
Well, you frame the motion any way you think is appropriate.
I'd move we increase section 1 to $258,500. And on our fiscal note, then on our backup, we'll indicate that $11,000 of that's for tubes and $9,000 for the VTR, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, I would point out, incidentally, that the television contractual services are already included in this figure. If you look at the fiscal note, it would say contractual services session television. It's already in there anyway, the operating expenditure. Well, that weasel's going to do that. Okay. There is objection to Mr. Duncan's motion. All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. All opposed, motion carries. 258-5, all right. Is there a motion to report the bill out?
I believe we're out of Finance Committee substitute on the 9th.
All right, is there objection? Hearing no objection, motion carries.
Terrible, wasn't it?
It was terrible.
You lost terrible.
Sonic's lost in overtime.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was that.
Who else wants to borrow? Any of you guys?
Final score.
What? Help yourself.
What's the point of
jail? I
did.
Wow. There was some damn started. It was only two guys down the car. Okay. All, we got a whole lot of gallery here. Are you here, all of you? Are the people, all, is everybody here for the withdrawal from Federal Social Security? Is that what everybody's here for?
No, I'm here for House Bill 647.
Okay.
Which one is that? That's the Department of Revenue Appropriation.
Okay.
Royalty.
On royalty. Okay. Somewhat less organized here than customarily. All right, we'll take up then House Bill 647. James, if we get the name of this bill, I won't be late. House Bill 647.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Peter Bushry, Acting Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Revenue for Treasury Operations. And under House Bill 647, we're requesting a change in the scope of work to be performed under funds appropriated last year under House Concurrent Resolution Number 27. By way of background, this particular piece of legislation appropriated funds to investigate the financing of an all-Alaska gas pipeline. At the time, of course, President Carter had not announced his preference for the Alcan project, and it was thought that an all-Alaska gas pipeline would be feasible. Under House Concurrent Resolution Number 27, $109,000 was appropriated for fiscal year 1978, $59,000 for fiscal year 1977. A contract was entered with the firm of Smith, Barney, Harris, Upham to investigate the financing of an all-Alaska gas pipeline. Upon President Carter's announcement in the fall that he preferred the Alcan project and El Paso's subsequent withdrawal, the Department of Revenue canceled the contract and submitted a supplemental request to amend the scope of the funds originally appropriated to an investigation of the purchase of Alaska's royalty gas. That is what House Bill 647 entails. It's
a request not for additional funds, merely to amend the scope of funds as appropriate.
Okay, some of you, this is in fact what was previously done by the Budget and Audit Committee. We had made a decision earlier in the session not to entertain these types of bills. However, since we made that decision, the court has made a decision, which changes the context in which we're working somewhat. And according to our counsel, these bills are appropriate so long as we change the title to read an act making FY78 transfers between appropriations. Now there's a third section that I'd like to add to it. It meets approval of the committee. What it is, the D2 Council, as you may know, had $20,000, which was appropriated to the Legislative Affairs Agency for the purpose of allowing legislators that were not members of the council to travel. That money lapses at the end of this month, the end of June. What we'd like to do is to change that act so that the money continues, so that legislators can continue to travel on a D2 issue if they'd like to and not lapse the money. Well, there's not that much left, but I guess we'd have to. What you'd essentially be doing is moving the $20,000 into the D2 into the Department of Natural Resources for the steering council. And what I'd like to do is move that and ask unanimous consent that we adopt a new section 3, and let Jay just draft the appropriate language to transfer that money so that it won't lapse, so that if people want to make that trip, you know, during the